when COVID hit, none of us had been through something like that. And it's you can't see it. Just like, you know, all that stuff that people talk about that may or may not be in existence in our sky. You can't see it, which is why it's so maddening. It's like, what's going on? And then how does it transfer from one person to another? And we learned all those things over the last couple of years. Dr. Casper, good morning to you. Hope you're doing well.
Well, yeah, good morning.
I get confused by a lot of things. One of them is an article that you helped us become privy to from The Hill, and it has to do with the CDC relaxing requirements for medical facilities. Because right up until just in my brain, till today, if I was going to go to the dentist or the doctor or the hospital, I have to wear a mask. And they have said that that is, let me get it right, have they said that's no longer necessary?
Yeah, one of the last remaining, you know, daily or mandatory parts of COVID is when you go to a healthcare facility, almost all of them are still requiring masking. The CDC released this not with not a lot of publicity in the last few days, that if your area qualifies as a lower COVID rate, meaning lower circulating rate of infection, that the facilities now have the option to back off of mandatory masking. Most facilities probably won't do this initially. This is over 2 years in the making where we've adapted to this practice as part of standard.
Sure.
And so it'll be interesting to see how quickly, if at all, facilities take this up. But this is really a dramatic shift as one of the last parts of COVID that we are enforcing throughout of our community.
I have to tell you, if I'm a healthcare provider, and you're dealing with people coming in from the outside, I would make it mandatory forever. I'm gonna wear one into a doctor's office. You got a bunch of people hacking in there.
I literally remember, Dr. Danny, I remember this happened. This is before COVID.
Yeah.
But I had to go someplace, and it was I went into a small clinic.
Yeah.
I walked in. I saw the people in the room. There's about six people in a very small space, all coughing.
Yeah.
I immediately turned around and left.
But if I'm a healthcare provider, I would still say everyone has to wear masks. I just think because you don't know, like COVID, we think it might have been around. You don't know where before we were very aware of it. We got the normal flu. Something could come along that's out there. I just think it's smart just to keep masking in all healthcare situations.
Well, here's what I don't understand, Doctor. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you touched on an important point there that you've included other respiratory infections. You included influenza, and certainly there are other seasonal viral infections that we're coming into the time of the year. And so I agree with you that it'll be interesting to see that facilities that have already adapted their protocols to include this, and people have become used to it, and where as a patient you're used to picking up a mask when you walk in the door and putting it on, that procedure is now common, and going away from it has almost become foreign, which is an amazing way to think about where we are from how we've done things for so long.
That is super amazing. And here's a part in that same story, and this was dated yesterday, 73% of the U.S. is experiencing high rates of transmission. So if that's the case, is it just because the severity is less scary than it used to be? Would that be the reason you'd relax that mask mandate? Translate that for me.
Yeah, Greg, I think that's the other key part. I'm glad you picked up on that in the article, is that we're backing off of a central guiding system across the country to tell us what to do in these situations. We're really going to start to leave it up to not only the individual states and their health department and then down through the county health department level, but this is also going to be played out at the individual institution, whether that's a hospital system that's making a decision, or sometimes it's even a single business owner in the case of, you know, dental facilities and others. And so we're going to take, you know, the future of COVID will be taken away from large overarching guidelines, and it will be put more into the individual's hand, which is also how we're approaching vaccination and booster strategy. But when you do that, what it requires is that the individuals then are somewhat up to date on how they're making the decision. And that part is going to be more challenging as COVID gets pushed farther and farther out of our day-to-day discussion.
So that brings me to an article I read. An FDA official says young people really doesn't, in fact, he recommends that they don't get the booster because of the lack of effectiveness for them. But again, if you read further in the article, this same official says he does recommend and shows effectiveness for people 55 and older. So it really seems with this variant that is the group that still, especially as you get older, you have underlying conditions that you may not even know about. It really seems now when it comes to the booster, it comes to people who get it, and there are still people dying, that you really have to focus on that over 55 to 60 crowd.
Yeah, we touched before that this is what's going to happen as far as kind of information releases, that as the boosters were approved, they were approved off of laboratory data, and they didn't have as robust clinical data as far as full effectiveness across all these different demographics. And so what you're going to see is a partial rollout of information that shows that, you know, in this group, the booster remains highly protective, and we believe that to be certainly 60 and older, remaining up to date on booster does show a benefit and a mortality benefit, meaning you're less likely to be hospitalized, less likely to die. But as that plays out across different age groups and as we get younger and different health conditions, we might see some changes as far as effectiveness. And so the individuals can still choose to receive it, and many people will based off of how they approach their health care. But it's not the same way we approach data release when the vaccines were initially approved, which was it came off of clinical trials with people of different age groups. They were selected, and then the statistics were played out and presented before we offered the shot.
Tell me about, real quick, as we wrap things up, Dr. Doug Casper, University of Illinois College of Medicine here in Peoria. Flu, we talked about it before. It's okay to get your vaccine, your COVID, your booster, and the flu shot at the same time. That's fine. But tell me about the transmission of flu. Going back a few minutes to when we first started this conversation about going into a doctor's office and people are wheezing and hacking and sneezing and all those things, which has been going on our whole lives as we went to a doctor. Is that how the flu, is the flu airborne? I feel dumb asking that.
Yeah, the flu is respiratory droplet.
Okay.
So it's it transmits over a shorter distance, but it's more common, especially in a pre-COVID era where masking was not part of any sort of regimen. The flu vaccine traditionally is about 50 to 60% effective at preventing infection or symptoms. But that comes with the caveat that those that get the flu vaccine, if they do become infected, are likely to have shorter course of infection and less severe symptoms. And so flu vaccine is approved for those 6 months and older. It's and there are alternatives for people who don't, especially children who don't want to receive shots. There is a nasal mist vaccine that can be given as well. But flu vaccine, historically, we have way more information off of what we base it. It's based off of worldwide trends seen out of Australia and Asia. And so we strongly recommend, as we're heading into flu season, at least in this area now through early spring, for individuals to get up to date on their flu shot.
And real quick, if you watch the internet, you'll see, oh my gosh, here's a new one. It's a Russian bat virus or this virus. There's like three or four of them that really haven't done anything that, the sensationalism of journalism. But with the COVID and how all the doctors and the research and everything came together, do you think we're better prepared, more aware on our radar for the next one?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, we have new epidemiology channels that are existing and will be funded across the world for early detection of these types of events. And that's something that is a welcome sight. Certainly there are ways we can use technology to help create kind of a consistent or real-time monitoring network. And a big part of it is investing in the science. You know, there's a lot that goes into early detection at a lab-based level. And so individuals going to work in that field and it being funded is a huge part of our future of public health.
All righty. Thank you, sir. Dr. Doug Casper, University of Illinois College of Medicine here in Peoria. Always appreciate your time and expertise.